Books on Tape presents Peony in Love by Lisa C. Read by Janet Song. The Ming Dynasty fell in 1644, and the Qing Dynasty, led by the Manchus, began. For about 30 years, the country was in turmoil. Some women were forced from their homes, others went out by choice. Literally thousands of women became published poets and writers. The lovesick maidens were a part of this phenomenon. The works of more than 20 of them have survived to today. I have followed the traditional Chinese style for rendering dates. Emperor Kangxi reigned from 1662 to 1722. Tang Xianzu's opera, The Peony Pavilion, was first produced and then published in 1598. Chen Tong, Peony in this novel, was born circa 1649, Tan Zi, circa 1656, and Qian Yi, circa 1671. In 1694, The Three Wives Commentary became the first book of its kind to be written and published by women anywhere in the world. Love is of source unknown, yet it grows ever deeper. The living may die of it, by its power the dead live again. Love is not love at its fullest if one who lives is unwilling to die for it, or if it cannot restore to life one who has died. And must love that comes in dream necessarily be unreal? For there is no lack of dream lovers in this world. Only for those whose love must be fulfilled on the pillow, and for whom affection deepens only after retirement from office, is it an entirely corporeal matter. Preface to the Peony Pavilion, Tang Xianzu, 1598. Part 1. In the Garden. Riding the Wind. 2 days before my 16th birthday, I woke up so early that my maid was still asleep on the floor at the foot of my bed. I should have scolded Willow, but I didn't, because I wanted a few moments alone to savor my excitement. Beginning tonight, I would attend a production of the Peony Pavilion mounted in our garden. I loved this opera and had collected 11 of the 13 printed versions available. I liked to lie in bed and read of the maiden Lin Yang and her dream lover, their adventures and their ultimate triumph. But for 3 nights, culminating on double seven, the 7th day of the 7th month, the day of the Lovers' Festival, and my birthday, I would actually see the opera, which was normally forbidden to girls and women. My father had invited other families for the festivities. We'd have contests and banquets. It was going to be amazing. Willow sat up and rubbed her eyes. When she saw me staring at her, she scrambled to her feet and offered good wishes. I felt another flutter of anticipation, so I was particular when Willow bathed me, helped me into a gown of lavender silk, and brushed my hair. I wanted to look perfect. I wanted to act perfectly. A girl on the edge of 16 knows how pretty she is, and as I looked in the mirror, I burned with the knowledge. My hair was black and silky. When Willow brushed it, I felt the strokes from the top of my head all the way down my back. My eyes were shaped like bamboo leaves. My brows were like gentle brush strokes limned by a calligrapher. My cheeks glowed the pale pink of a peony petal. My father and mother liked to comment on how appropriate this was, because my name was Peony. I tried, as only a young girl can, to live up to the delicateness of my name. My lips were full and soft. My waist was small, and my breasts were ready for a husband's touch. I wouldn't say I was vain. I was just a typical 15-year-old girl. I was secure in my beauty, but had enough wisdom to know it was only fleeting. My parents adored me and made sure I was educated, highly educated. I lived a rarefied and precious existence in which I arranged flowers, looked pretty, and sang for my parents' entertainment. I was so privileged that even my maid had bound feet. As a small girl, I believed that all the gatherings we held and all the treats we ate during Double Seven were a celebration for me. No one corrected my mistake, because I was loved and very, very spoiled. I took a breath and let it out slowly. Happy. This would be my last birthday at home before I married out, and I was going to enjoy every minute. I left my room in the unmarried girls' hall and headed in the direction of our ancestral hall to make offerings to my grandmother. I'd spent so much time getting ready that I made a quick obeisance. I didn't want to be late for breakfast. My feet couldn't take me as fast as I wanted to go, but when I saw my parents sitting together in a pavilion overlooking the garden, I slowed. If Mama was late, I could be late too. "Unmarried girls should not be seen in public," I heard my mother say. "I'm even concerned for my sisters-in-law. You know I don't encourage private excursions. Now to bring outsiders in for this performance." She let her voice trail off. I should have hurried on, but the opera meant so much to me that I stayed, lingering out of sight behind the twisted trunks of a wisteria vine. "There is no public here," Baba said. "This will not be some open affair where women disgrace themselves by sitting among men. You will be hidden behind screens." "But outside men will be within our walls. They may see our stockings and shoes beneath the screen. They may smell our hair and powder. And of all the operas, you have chosen one about a love affair that no unmarried girl should hear." My mother was old-fashioned in her beliefs and her behavior. In the social disorder that followed the cataclysm, when the Ming Dynasty fell and the Manchu invaders took power, many elite women enjoyed leaving their villas to travel the waterways in pleasure boats, write about what they saw, and publish their observations. Mama was completely against things like that. She was a loyalist, still dedicated to the overthrown Ming Emperor, but she was excessively traditional in other ways. When many women in the Yangtze Delta were reinterpreting the four virtues, virtue, demeanor, speech, and work, my mother constantly chided me to remember their original meaning and intent. "Hold your tongue at all times," she liked to say. "But if you must speak, wait until there is a good moment. Do not offend anyone." My mother could get very emotional about these things because she was governed by Qing, sentiment, passion, and love. These forces tie together the universe and stem from the heart, the seat of consciousness. My father, on the other hand, was ruled by Li, cold reason and mastered emotions, and he snorted indifferently at her concern that strangers were coming. "You don't complain when the members of my poetry club visit?" "But my daughter and my nieces aren't in the garden when they're here. There's no opportunity for impropriety. And what about the other families you've invited?" "You know why I invited them," he spat out sharply, his patience gone. "Commissioner Tan is important to me right now. Do not argue further with me on this." I couldn't see their faces, but I imagined Mama paling under his sudden severity. She didn't speak. Mama managed the inner realm, and she always kept fish-shaped locks of beaten metal hidden in the folds of her skirts in case she needed to secure a door to punish a concubine, preserve bolts of silk that had arrived from one of our factories for home use, or protect the pantry, the curtain-weaving quarters, or the room set aside for our servants to pawn their belongings when they needed extra money. That she never used a lock unjustly had earned her added respect and gratitude from those who resided in the women's.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?